Spirit of Truth Ministry now presents The Bible on Trial, a show that tests the teachings of Christianity against the words and the teachings that Jesus Christ gave to his own eyewitness disciples while he was here on earth. Join us for a challenging and unique study into truth, justice, and the kingdom of heaven. Hello and welcome, everyone. My name is Dennis, and I am here with Dr. Don and Rick, and we are getting ready for another study, which is entitled The Bible on Trial. This is brought to you by our ministry, Spirit of Truth Ministry, and we are delighted that you've taken a few minutes out of your busy day to join us, either here live at 10 a.m., and there's quite a few people who are on with us today. It looks like Tom and Linda, and it looks like Roger might be on, Don and Linda, rather. And there's even a area code that I don't recognize. It's 814, and we'll have to figure that one out later. But welcome, all of you. And I want you to take a quick peek. If you are online with us, you can go to our chat room, and there you will find our original website and our official website. The official website is spiritoftruthministry.net. And on that site, you will find our book, The Spirit of the Church, and all sorts of great writing by Rick Sterling. You will also find some good writing by Rick and the rest of us on our original website, located at spiritoftruthministry.net/SM. Today is March 29, 2019, almost at the end of the month, and boy, did this month go by quickly. It's interesting, the older I get, the faster time flies. I want it to slow down. I don't want it to move that fast. Anyway, we are again delighted that you are here with us today. Let's have prayer and we will get on with our study. Father in heaven, Jesus Christ, Holy Spirit, grant us peace, safety, a clear mind, and a pure heart as we listen to what you have to say to us through the words of Jesus Christ, through the Old Testament, through Revelation and the prophets. And I thank you, Father, for taking care of us in this way so that we can learn and know the truth. Good morning, Dr. Don.
Good morning.
Hang on, let me do this again. Okay, now say it.
Good morning.
Now they can hear you. And good morning, Rick. Nice to see you today.
Dennis, good to see you too. And welcome, everyone, our listeners. Welcome.
I forgot to tell you how many we have today on our RSS feed on the website. We now have 31,501 people who have registered to get an email so that when we post, you will get a notification.
And I am working on the Gospel of the Kingdom book. I don't know. It seems like I started it about a year ago, and there's more and more things that I add to it, so that I'm to the place now where I think I'm just going to have to go back and redo a lot of it.
Well, see, here's
if
the thing.
I had the time to do it,
Here's the thing. You know, when we were writing the book, The Spirit of the Church, there came a time when we just had to say, okay, enough is enough. We have to do this and we'll fix it later. I think you're getting to that point on your current writing that you might just want to finish
yes.
it up and
because
let's
there
post it.
There are things in our book that I would need to modify.
But it's still a good primer.
It is.
I mean, it still works.
It is. The world that we are living in today is a world of lies. If you've been following the news over the last, I'll say the last two and a half years. But it's really been a lot longer than that. If you watched the majority of the, quote, mainstream media, you heard, quote, unquote, facts presented. The facts that were presented have now been exposed as lies. Are they ready to admit and acknowledge that they were lies? Oh, no. They are creating a new narrative to attack from a different perspective. If you do not want to know the truth, you will do whatever it takes to support and maintain the false narrative that you prefer. A good example is the individual who created his own attack in Chicago. He paid for it. He gave the two that he had to participate with him in this attack, wrote them a check, and told them exactly where to be and what to do and what to say, which of course they did. And the lie was found out. I mean, he wrote a check. There's irrefutable evidence that he was responsible for the whole thing. But he is maintaining his innocence and victimhood, and that he is being attacked by a system that is anti everything he stands for. But why would someone do that? Because they are looking to control a narrative in which they will be seen as a person that should be looked up to, acknowledged, and supported. The same thing happened not too long ago with a football quarterback whose career was pretty much on the rocks, and he needed to do something because he couldn't do anything else. So he created a false narrative. He got a lot of people to buy into it, and it accomplished exactly what he wanted. Back at least 6,000 years ago, and probably a little longer, a similar thing happened. In the Garden of the Paradise of God, there were two people living happily. They had everything they could ever want. And they were fine with that. They even had access to eternal life. But there was a snake in the grass a rebel who had fomented an insurrection against the Ancient of Days. He did not like him at all, thought he was unfair. Not only thought he was unfair, he knew he was unfair. Not only unfair, but unjust. And according to his narrative, the Ancient of Days was unrighteous, cruel, overbearing, legalistic, a dictator. So he rebelled. He got a third of those spiritual beings who had worked with him, sided, took his side of things, and they walked to and fro on the earth. The plan that the Ancient of Days had to put down the rebellion, quell the insurrection, and determine what the just punishment would be, put his plan in motion. And that's why there was the garden and the man and the woman living in the garden. They were the progenitors of the plan of righteousness. That is, the plan to restore righteousness to this earth. The serpent, or the spiritual being in the form of a serpent, knew that he needed to take matters into his own hands, and if he didn't do something, he was doomed. His days were numbered. He did not want his days to be numbered, for he knew what it meant. He knew that if God ever got a foothold on this earth, if God ever had a kingdom, a people, a righteous nation on this earth, that God would have the lawful authority to destroy him and all those who believed in him. And I'm talking about the serpent, Satan. Last weekend, something very profound happened with me. As most of you know, I've been doing this for over 25 years. This year, this July, I will have been married for 42 years to the same wonderful woman whom I love. She's been patient with me. She loves me also. And there's one thing about a spouse, particularly a wife. You can't fool them. Well, you can try, but you can't. They know. And all this time, she's been supportive of me in this ministry. But she's never been ready, and never has, acknowledge that God could be using me. Until last Sabbath, when she acknowledged that she was sure that God was using me. Maybe even that I might be a significant part of God's plan. I've always thought that this would not get started. And what I mean by that is as a fully operational ministry until my wife believed that I could be a part of God's master plan to restore righteousness to this world. So, whatever that may mean, and if that is meaningful, I wanted to share that with you. The serpent determined that he needed to stop the plan in its tracks. He needed to take matters into his own hands, and he needed to do it in such a way that he could not fail, because if he failed once, that would be it. I think that's why in Genesis 3, that chapter starts out with, the serpent was the most had made. There is something that I have missed. When I've read that verse, I think, okay, so first of all, Moses wrote Genesis. But Moses did not write Genesis from his memory of what his mother told him. Moses wrote Genesis from what the Ancient of Days told him. So the Ancient of Days said the serpent was the most subtle of all the wild beasts that Yahweh God had made. What does that mean in a real sense, in a physical sense? Well, the snake. Snakes, God made snakes to be the wisest, most intelligent of all the beasts. Really? Is that true? Well, snakes might be pretty smart, but so are other animals, particularly mammals. So what is God trying to convey here? The devil needed a disguise. He needed a disguise that would help the most with his deception. The devil could take on any form that he wanted. And so he took on the form of that which was perceived as the greatest God, small g, on the earth. To the Asian nations, the nations in Asia, it was the dragon. To the nations in South America, and I understand that it wasn't named South America at the time, but just so you understand what I'm talking about now, it was the plumed serpent. In North America, it was also a serpent. In Egypt, it was a cobra, which is a serpent. In fact, when you look at all of the nations of the world in paganism, their highest and wisest gods were always serpentine gods. And so it stands to reason that it was the form of a serpent that Satan chose to appear as he entered the garden. And what he offers to the man and the woman in the garden, if they eat from the tree, is what the man and the woman would see is coming from a god, small g. They knew that that serpent that was speaking to them was one of the gods of the nations around them. And then he says, did God really say you were not to eat from any of the trees in the garden? The question is carefully
crafted
and posed. There's a hint of God. You know, have you ever thought about how maybe that what God said was somewhat unfair and arbitrary, maybe dictatorial? Sounds kind of like something you wouldn't want to associate with. The woman answered the serpent. The woman answered the serpent. The woman did not say, "Get behind me, Satan." The woman answered the serpent. We may eat the fruit of the trees in the garden, but of the fruit of the tree in the middle of the garden, God said, you must not eat it nor touch it under pain of death. That means you will be executed. Then the serpent said to the woman, no! Just like that. No! You will not die. God is not going to put you to death.
He wouldn't.
He wouldn't dare.
He wouldn't dare, exactly.
God knows, in fact, that on the day you eat it, your eyes will be opened and you will be like God, small g, knowing good and evil.
And you wrote a great paper on this a while back entitled Elohim, which is on the on our website. And it's based on the implication of the meaning of that word. It is Strong's Hebrew H430, Elohim, and the first definition is gods, small g, in the ordinary sense.
The woman saw that the tree was good to eat and pleasing to the eye, and that it was desirable for the knowledge that it could give. So she took some of its fruit and ate it. She gave some also to her husband, who was with her, and he ate. Then the eyes of both of them were opened, and they realized they were naked. So they sewed fig leaves together to make themselves loincloths. Now we know the rest of the story. We know that the Lord came to the garden that evening and was looking for them, and they were hiding. He asked why they were hiding, and they said, because we were naked. Well, I thought they had sewed fig leaves together and they were no longer naked. What are they talking about? We were afraid because we were naked. What were they afraid of? They were not physically naked. What were they afraid of? They were afraid of the pain of death. Turn to the last chapter of the book of Revelation. And starting with verse 10. This too he said to me, do not keep the prophecies in this book a secret, because the time is close. Meanwhile, let the sinner go on sinning, and the unclean continue to be unclean. Let those who do good go on doing good, and those who are holy continue to be holy.
What verse is that?
10 and 11. Did you notice something in those two verses? I noticed two opposites. What is the opposite of sinner and sinning? Good and doing good. What is the opposite of unclean?
Obviously clean or righteous.
Or those who are holy continue to be holy. What does that mean?
That they already are holy and they need to continue.
Well, yeah, but how did they get to be holy? Were they born holy?
No, they had to go through the process of sanctification.
Which is?
Learning the truth and learning how to practice it.
When God took the Hebrews and the mixed multitude out of Egypt, how many different routes could he take them? Well, at least two, maybe three. He didn't take them by the quickest, easiest route because they weren't ready to face an enemy. Why were they not ready to face an enemy? Because none of them had been baptized. None of them. They were not ready to face an enemy because, and you say, well, what do you have to be baptized before you face an enemy? Yes. In God's plan, you need to be baptized before you can take on an enemy of God. So he brought them down to a place. He didn't bring them to a swamp like they would want you to believe, the Reed Sea, where, you know, the water is never more than about knee deep. He brought them to a place in the sea where they would all have to pass through the water. Through the water. And God was making a point that it wasn't so much that you needed to get wet. It was that you needed to pass through the water, which would mean that you were clean on the outside, but that was your, it was part of the process. So that whole multitude passed through the water between the divided sea to the other side. The Egyptian army followed quickly behind them. As soon as God turned on the lights again, they started after this multitude. But God didn't intend to, he did baptize them, but God didn't intend for them to be baptized, which is the first requirement of righteousness, the water baptism. First requirement of righteousness. What righteousness demands is a water baptism to begin with. They went in between the uplifted waters, and when they were all in there, God stopped the wind and the waters, the walls of water rushed together, burying and executing one of the greatest armies on earth at the time. That generation, the adults, those who were of the age of accountability, were held accountable for the requirements of righteousness. They had passed through the water. They had the water baptism. And in the wilderness, they were to be sanctified and become holy. God told Moses what that involved, and Moses told the priests and the people. The priests told the people. The people knew exactly what they needed to do to be holy. And yet, at every moment, they refused. Even the high priest, Aaron, and Moses. Because Moses did not demonstrate holiness when he struck the rock in anger. And he was not able to enter the promised land. Why? Because he had begun the process of sanctification. Moses is a very good example of the true meaning of grace, not the way that Paul presents it, but the way that God presents it. It is graciousness. So that is why that after about 2 years in the wilderness, it wasn't quite 2 years, they had the tabernacle, they had the sacrificial system, they had the feast participation. They had everything they needed to learn exactly what God required from his people to be a holy nation, to be righteous, doing good. That's why he took them to Kadesh Barnea on the border of the promised land. And that is why he did not bring them back to the same place 38 years later. Do you know why? Why didn't God bring them back to Kadesh Barnea? Because those who were entering the promised land were not of the age of accountability when their parents and the adults were baptized as they walked through on dry land between the waters of the Red Sea. They now needed to be baptized. They needed to meet the demands of righteousness. And the first demand is you must pass through the water. Water cleansing, fire cleansing. Water cleansing, fire cleansing. That's the way it's always been. God has been very, very clear. Water cleansing, fire cleansing. The earth has had its water cleansing. It is being prepared for its fire cleansing. And if you have not been cleansed by the fire of the Holy Spirit, you will be, the earth will be cleansed by the fire of the second death. The reason that God brought that second generation to the shores of the Jordan River in Moab is because these people needed to be baptized. They needed the water cleansing. That's why they did not go to Kadesh Barnea, where that first generation went. How much clearer can God make it? God does not skirt the requirements because he's God. God complies with every single one of the elements in order to meet the demands of righteousness. And God is proved righteous by his deeds, as well as those who are God's people are proved righteous by their deeds. And God says this over and over and over again. And here in Revelation chapter 22, verses 10 and 11. And it's actually verse 11. Let the sinner go on sinning, but let those who do good go on doing good. Let the unclean continue to be unclean, but those who are holy continue to be holy. When we come into this world, we are not born holy. When we come into this world, we haven't even met the first demand of righteousness. We can't meet the first demand of righteousness until we have reached the age of accountability, till we can be responsible for the decisions that we make. Back in the days of the children of Israel, that age was 12. I'm not here to say when the age of accountability is, other than when someone is ready to make that decision, they need to know what they're choosing.
Hi. Go ahead, Donna.
Okay, Rick. I'm going to ask now a very specific question. Somebody out there this morning is listening. Probably never heard us before. And has not been baptized. What do they do? Do you have to be baptized by a clerical person, a person of the cloth? Who can baptize you?
Are you baptized into a church?
That would be a question.
No. First of all, if you choose to be baptized, you need to know what the what is required. What are you doing? It is the first step in what righteousness demands. And if you think that you're baptized and then you're saved, well, I guess that's what the Israelites thought. That's certainly what Christians believe. When you are baptized, they tell you, you're saved. Your baptism, and they have turned it into a Pauline lie, just like everything else. What does Paul say about the baptism, the water baptism? You're dying to your old self and you're being resurrected to your new life. The water baptism is nothing more than a figurative death, burial, and resurrection. That's it. Nothing more. Nothing more is required. If you eat from that tree, you will not be put to death. You will be like the gods. Well, the only one I know of who was put to death, was buried, and was resurrected is the Son of God. Death could not hold him. So he really wasn't resurrected by anyone. He woke up from the dead because death could not hold him. He was righteous, and that was the proof that he was righteous. That was the proof that he was righteous. He woke up.
While you've been giving this is fantastic, Rick. I've been doing a little bit of a study on the word light. Now, one of the things that you have talked about is consistently now for a year is how the intellect affects our salvation. And you talked today about baptism. That is the first step in the process of sanctification. That is becoming righteous. So I went to John 3:19-21, and I read that again, and then I looked up a very interesting word. So, quick-like, here it is. This is the judgment that the light, he doesn't say light, it is the light, has come into the world, and men loved the darkness rather than the light, for their deeds were evil. Verse 20, for everyone who does evil hates the light and does not come to the light for fear that his deeds will be exposed. But he who practices the truth comes to the light. And there's a couple of words here. So that his deeds may be manifested as having been wrought in God. Now, I've got two definitions to give you. One is Strong's G5457, which is phos.
454.
It is 5457, phos. Now, what is a particle of light named?
Photon.
A photon. And this is where it comes from. This word is actually an obsolete word. It means to shine, now listen, or to make manifest. What did we just hear? That his deeds may be manifested as having been wrought in God. Now, there is a secondary word that is associated with that phos, and that is phaino. It is G5316. That is to lighten or shine, to show, to think. What does the intellect do?
Process information.
And what do you call that?
Thinking. And another thing, Dennis.
So there.
About a photon. Tell me about a photon.
It's a particle of light that can act either as a particle or a wave.
So it can be physical
or
spiritual.
Exactly.
There you go. Back to Revelation. Verse 12 of chapter 22. Very soon now, I shall be with you again. Well, you say, God told John this, 2,000 years ago? But, you know, to God, time is but a moment. 1,000 years is a blink of an eye. 10,000 years is a second.
So we have to ask, what is the time frame of this term quickly?
What I'm going to say is, are we talking about humanity here, or are we talking about God? Is God the one that has to wait, or are we the ones that have to wait? If God is saying this, what does he mean? Well, what is he talking about? What does verse 10 say? 2, he said to me, do not keep the prophecies in this book a secret because the time is close. Well, what does he mean by that? Keep the prophecies in this book a secret because the time is close. What I would say is that when the prophecies of this book are made clear, it's going to happen quickly.
Remember, Daniel was told to seal up the book of the prophecy of Daniel.
The last.
The end time prophecy. Until the appointed time of the end. Does Revelation fall into that purview?
How would one keep the prophecies of the book of Revelation a secret? I mean, it says, do not keep the prophecies of the book a secret. It doesn't say these prophecies of this book are not a secret. It says, do not keep them a secret. What does that mean? That means you have been instructed. Who? You who? Do not keep the prophecies of this book a secret. So who might want to keep the prophecies of this book a secret?
Well, I would say that the author of evil would want that.
Heh. Just like he would want the man and the woman in the garden to eat from that tree.
Exactly.
In one case, he's promising them knowledge of secrets, and in another case, he's purposefully keeping the truth of a prophetic book a secret, because he knows that once you can understand what the prophecies in this book are, then the time is close. Then it is about ready to happen.
And so, Matthew 24:45, who then is the faithful and sensible slave whom his master has put in charge of his household to give them their food at the proper time? When is that proper time?
When it is close. When the time is close.
And when the
information... When his coming is soon.
And when the information has been made clear.
Soon I will be with you, he says. The start of the book of Revelation is telling. I've read this a few times. I'm going to read it one more. Revelation 1, 1, 2, and 3. This is the revelation given by God to Jesus Christ so that he could tell his servants about the things which are now to take place. Very soon, which are now to take place very soon.
There is an immediacy about that, isn't there?
Well, very soon to God can mean 1,000 years from now, 2,000 years from now, 5,000 years from now. That's ridiculous. Who then is the faithful
and wise
enough?
Right.
Has God kept this information, the understanding of this? Has he kept it a secret from everyone until the one he decided to reveal it to came along?
You know, it's always been there.
It's always been there. What has kept this book a secret? God didn't keep it a secret. What has kept this book a secret? The same one who triumphed in the garden with a lie that was desirable. The fruit was desirable for wisdom.
The lie was tasty.
Desirable. He sent his angel to make it known to his servant, John. And John has written down everything he saw and swears it is the word of God, guaranteed by Jesus Christ. Happy the man who reads this prophecy, and happy those who listen to that man. Now, I know it doesn't say that man, but that's what it means. Why are they happy? Why are they happy? Happy those who listen to him. If they treasure all it says, because the time is close.
So this information is a treasure of incalculable value.
You see, the closeness of the time is not up to God. The closeness of the time is up to us. Us. If we want to believe the lie and continue to believe the lie, if we prefer the lie, if we know that if we believe that God will credit that to us as righteousness, even if it's a lie, he has grace that he can accommodate our faith as if it was righteousness.
Grace upon grace upon grace.
For thousands of years, God has known that there would come one person who would be faithful and wise enough for God to finally put down the rebellion and destroy the insurrection. Faithful and wise enough. And I think that that is the only person who would do this. I'm not saying who could do this. I'm saying who would do this. This could have been done a long time ago. That's why we're in a delay. We are in a delay because the person needed to be ready themselves. The person needed to be ready themselves. That's why we're in a delay. But as soon as that person is ready, not for their own salvation, but that person needs to be prepared so that the world can be saved through the truth. The world can be saved because there's an innumerable amount of people who, if given the truth, would embrace it and would live it and would share it. More on this tomorrow.
That cannot be said more clearly. And what it means is that if we want to become righteous, we have to convert our intellect to righteousness by practicing it.
We have to make our unclean intellect
clean
and holy.
And we are responsible for that. Thank you, Rick. Thank you all for being here. I encourage you to go to our website at spiritoftruthministry.net and look around. I also encourage you to join us tomorrow for another edition of The Revelation of Jesus with Rick Sterling at 10 a.m. right here on this Blog Talk Radio channel. On behalf of Spirit of Truth Ministry, this is Dennis saying so long for now. We'll see you all tomorrow. Have a good day and blessings on you.
Blog Talk Radio.